It is Thursday, June 14th. Happy Flag Day. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar.
The 22nd Annual Riverfront Blues Festival is June 22nd and 23rd at Harry E. Kelly Park in Fort Smith. Performing artists include Chubby Carrier, Tyrannosaurus Chicken, Trampled Underfoot, and more. Shows begin Friday at 6 and Saturday at 5. Tickets and information at riverfrontbluesfest.org. The 2012 KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival continues tonight with the Flute Sonata by Prokofiev and the First Piano Sonata in B Major by Brahms. These pieces performed by the University of Arkansas Music Department faculty and guest artists this evening at 7:30 at the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall. Admission is free. Information available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu.
Ahead on today's show, Ron Tanner is coming to town to talk about the unbelievable house rehabilitation project he undertook. He writes about the experience of restoring a once beautiful home after it had been trashed, and he did with no idea of how to do it. He'll be in Eureka Springs and Fayetteville this weekend to talk about his new book, From Animal House to Our House.
First, the official campaign season for the 2014 election in Arkansas is underway. Yesterday, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel announced he would seek the governor's office in the 2014 election cycle. The announcement makes the Attorney General the first high-profile candidate to officially declare his intentions for the office. Earlier this year, another expected candidate for the Democratic nomination, Congressman Mike Ross, said he would not run. Former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter, another potential candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor, issued a statement yesterday criticizing Dustin McDaniel's announcement, saying such an early declaration of a candidacy may undermine candidates on the 2012 ballot.
Arkansas Children's Hospital cut the ribbon on its largest ever expansion project yesterday. The pediatric hospital's 258,000 square foot south wing adds 54 inpatient beds to the campus. The addition brings a new emergency department, updates for cardiovascular and neonatal intensive care units, and 5 new outpatient clinics. Governor Mike Beebe was on hand for the opening and says the wing will ultimately add 100 new medical professionals to the hospital's staff.
You know how much economic activity flows from that? Do it for the right reason. If that doesn't trip your stress meter, do it because it helps the economy of the entire region. Whatever the reason, do what Ginger said. Help every possible way you can.
Hospital officials say the project cost $121 million and was paid for with the hospital's savings, donations, and a bond issued in 2009.
Lawmakers in Washington are still haggling over the Farm Bill, and Senator Mark Pryor of Arkansas says the current draft of the legislation just won't cut it for his constituents.
The truth is, I don't support the Farm Bill in its current state because of the rice provisions. I think that this is a classic case of Midwest agriculture versus Southern agriculture, and I think this bill is way too tilted toward the Midwest, and our rice farmers are the ones that are really taking the big loss here.
Pryor's colleague in the Senate, John Bozeman, says it is a bipartisan effort to make sure that Arkansans get their fair share.
This is not a Democrat or Republican thing. It's more of a regional thing. The Midwest, they have particular problems as they grow their crops, and then the Great Plains states, and then the South. And so myself and Senator Pryor are working really hard in the Senate to make sure that Southern agriculture is represented and gets the safety net in place that's fair and reasonable.
Senator Bozeman says the Arkansas delegation wants to make sure farmers in the state can get the kinds of loans they need to bolster crops. Senator Pryor admits they don't have the votes right now to make substantial changes to the bill.
The National Weather Service makes no mention of rain for the area in the next 36 hours. It should be clear tonight, with lows in the mid to upper 60s throughout the region, and sunny tomorrow with highs around 90.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals open a 4-game series in spring field tonight. Yesterday, the Nats dropped their fourth straight game, losing at Tulsa 6-2. That loss leaves the Naturals 3 games out of first place in the Texas League North. The Nats return home for an 8-game homestand on Monday night. And this is Ozarks at Large, and it is a busy week for news. June's supposed to be quiet. That's not the case, especially today. Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, and more for the entire KUAF listening area, with me on the phone from his office. Michael, am I right in my assessment that this is a busy Thursday?
Yes, and you're right. I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned, but June has been busy, and it typically is slow. People take off and get their vacations out of the way, but not so far this month.
Let's start with news from Arkansas Best.
Right. Not that big of a surprise. We'd reported on it several weeks ago, the rumors, but no longer a rumor. $180 million deal, Arkansas Best, based here in Fort Smith, is buying Panther Expedited Services. It's a company, entirely logistics company, transportation logistics. They get goods from one point to the next, but they don't own the equipment. They just broker the different types of transportation, whether it's rail, truck, shipping, air, to get, and it's a very broad service. They can get stuff to your door, small items to your door, or, you know, large shipments to a warehouse. So, and it's, you know, it's something that Arkansas Best and any less than truckload carrier or carrier really has to do. The transportation sector is evolving to where you really have to provide almost a one-stop shopping. I know that's old and cliched, but one-stop shopping to as many customers as you can. You don't need to be handing them off to different folks to get their goods and goods shipped. You want to be able to deal with them from point A to point B. And so that's what Arkansas Best is doing with this company. You know, and we've seen that, you know, J.B. Hunt there in Lowell was one of the leaders many years ago. They got into the logistics business when they were logistics when logistics wasn't cool. So they led that. But Arkansas Best is doing this. They're financing it with a $100 million loan and then paying $80 million in cash. We'll see how this helps going forward. You know, Arkansas Best has really struggled to come out of this freight recession, and their shares are at a 52-week low now, and I think they traded even below that to open this morning. So we'll see what the market thinks of this, and then going forward, we'll see how it transfers to the bottom line. Arkansas Best says that this should begin boosting their earnings as early as the third quarter of this year.
Does this mean new jobs for Fort Smith?
Unfortunately, no. They've said they're going to leave the management team and everything intact in Ohio. The company's based in Seville, Ohio. They're going to leave it there.
Okay.
Short answer, no. The fat answer is no, I guess.
There are some jobs, though, new jobs because of Golden Living and moving some IT jobs to Fort Smith.
Right.
Or adding, I guess.
Adding jobs. And this is one of those things where it's not a lot. It's 12 jobs. Now, that's not a lot. But this company, Golden Living, employs roughly 42,000 people company-wide. And, you know, they moved their corporate headquarters and moved their corporate execs and the corporate headquarters staff to Dallas about a year ago. But they've left this administrative service center here in Fort Smith, employs around 800, maybe 900. But there's a little bit of security. If you're consolidating operations at a facility, moving them from other places to one facility, that provides some security. So, you know, in Fort Smith, in the Fort Smith region, the stability of companies has been one of those areas of uncertainty. Hopefully this Golden Living provides some certainty to their employment base in Fort Smith.
News from the banking sector in Northwest Arkansas, modest but improving numbers.
Right, and, you know, this is our Compass report recently that we put out. You know, our economist Jeff Collins said that he's beginning to see the debris from the home sector implosion is beginning to be removed. It's beginning to not be an anchor on the Northwest Arkansas regional economy. And I think that's what we're seeing with these banking numbers in Northwest Arkansas. The banks are finally getting all of that bad debt, those old home loans, subdivision loans, off their books, making their capital ratios look better. And they're not having to push as much money out to cover those future loan losses. And we're seeing a little bit of that in the Fort Smith area also. But between what we're seeing in home sales in Northwest Arkansas, home starts in Northwest Arkansas, and now these bank numbers, I don't want to say that the that home sector issue is completely clear now, but it's getting there.
All of these numbers just seem that things just remain tenuous, that it doesn't take much more than a light breeze to move the needle one way or the other.
Well, you know, and that's true. And just this morning, as we're talking, the jobless claims, the unemployment claims nationwide, inched up above estimates. And so we're seeing some real issues, and that talk of are we entering another recession has emerged again at the national level. GDP numbers have been revised downward. The jobless numbers continue to go in the wrong direction. This is nationwide. And, you know, at some point, even the Northwest Arkansas regional economy, which is really white hot compared to most other metro areas around the country, we'll see what kind of impact that has. But especially for the Fort Smith area, it can't be good.
Finally, yesterday, Roby Bronk from Talk Business and I talked about what to expect in the rest of the 2012 election. And just, you know, moments after we were done with our conversation, the 2014 election took the headlines with Attorney General Dustin McDaniel.
So you want us to talk about the 2016 election today?
Somebody somewhere is probably already talking about 2016.
Right. Yes, Dustin McDaniel, it's no surprise, Arkansas's Attorney General. I think he's been campaigning for governor. He started campaigning for governor when he began campaigning for attorney general.
Well, and that is not unusual in Arkansas. Mike Beebe, Bill Clinton.
No, Bill, that's right. That's been the door to the governor's office. And so he's going to run for that. Now, his path to the governor's office was made somewhat easier when Mike Ross, Congressman Ross, decided not to run for governor. You know, Ross had said he wasn't going to run for re-election to the 4th District, and everyone just assumed, and Ross had even made feelers toward running for the governor's office, but decided not to. So I'm not going to say it's wide open for McDaniel, but he is definitely the front runner. Bill Halter put out somewhat of a testy statement saying that, you know, this is way too early to be announcing that you're running for governor, which indicates that Halter is seriously considering it.
Right.
I'm not the brightest guy in the world, but I can kind of figure that out. But so Halter could be in it, John Burkhalter on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, it's mentioned that Congressman Womack has been interested. I don't know. I think every time I talk to him, he really enjoys what he's doing, and Congress, I would be surprised if he'd make that move.
That said, we still have 140 plus days before we even have the 2012 election.
Right, and just once again to stress, I think this 2012 election, we're closely watching the legislative elections. This is, I think we're going to look back and see that this was a very interesting year historically for Arkansas. Not only are all the seats, House and Senate seats, up for re-election because of redistricting, the census, but this could be the first year since after the Civil War that the Republicans have any type of majority in one or both houses. Interesting.
Even if the Republican Party does not gain one or both chambers, it's still going to be very, very split, and that will make Governor Beebe's last 2 years very interesting.
Right, and we saw the first signs of that in this recent fiscal session, because there were 55 Democrats and 45 Republicans in the House. Now, we didn't see so much in the Senate. The Senate rocked along pretty smooth, but we saw some early signs that typically that partisanship we see in D.C. We saw some elements, not near to that nuttiness, but we saw some of those elements in Little Rock.
Plenty to watch as the summer unfolds. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, and much more for the entire KUAF listening area. Michael, thank you very much.
All right. Always good talking to you.
This is Ozarks at Large. This weekend, a local theater group will be bringing Les Miserables to the River Valley for the first time. But this isn't your typical community theater company. This production is put on entirely by people under the age of 20. The Young Actors Guild, or YAG, is the oldest youth theater group in Arkansas and the only one to gain national recognition. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas went to the Alma Performing Arts Center to see the group's final dress rehearsal before Les Mis opens this evening. Here is her report.
Those are the opening notes of Les Miserables, a production of the Young Actors Guild of Fort Smith. That was recorded yesterday during a run-through at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tonight, however, those notes will be played by the Fort Smith Symphony. Previous YAG shows have been Footloose, Grease, Hairspray, which used rock bands. The music needs for this production were much different. YAG music director Brenda Yelvington says that partnering with the Fort Smith Symphony has been amazing.
And the opening chords of Les Mis, if you're a fan, are iconic and huge. And at our first rehearsal, when that symphony struck those opening chords, those first few measures, it was just surreal for us. We've come a long way.
Brenda enjoys working with kids and for this organization because she says it changes lives. She is able to help set the bar for the young actors and says that they exceed expectations every time. The group primarily works with junior high and high schoolers, typically a difficult time for a lot of kids.
It doesn't matter what's going on at home. They're transformed, and once they get on this stage in front of 500, 700, 1,000 people night after night, and they nail that part, and they hear that note, and they get that blocking, they realize they can do anything.
One such child that she's seen grow auditioned in 2002 and didn't get the part. But he stuck it out and is now playing the lead role, Jean Valjean.
He probably was 12, playing Linus on stage with a blanket, you know, sucking his thumb. It was part of the character and going for it. And there he was, flopped out, blanket, sucking his thumb, and then to look up there and truthfully, you know, Chad's 19. This will be his last play with us because he's aging out. But now what I see is I see a man, an incredible young man with incredible talent like most of them have. But it's hard. I still see him as a little boy, but he's not. He's a man that can totally bring it on stage.
Chad Burrows can attest that theater and YAG have helped him grow.
It used to be more of like a selfish thing. Like as a young kid, you like getting the applause and stuff, but now it's more like the whole process of it all. Just like getting cast, working with the technicians and putting the scene changes together, getting the costumes and just the whole experience of having nothing and then building off of that. And now it's this huge scale production. And at first we were in an old library with nothing. And now it's, you know, beautiful Broadway sets, costumes, wigs, a symphony. Like, it's just so cool to see it all happen.
This production is the largest budget that YAG has ever had, allowing them to have Broadway costumes, the symphony, and master classes. Gary Morris played Jean Valjean in the original Broadway production of Les Mis. He made the trip to the Alma PAC to work with the cast and crew of this production. He worked a lot with the staging of the first number, spending 2 hours on this 9-minute opening. He also gave Chad some advice.
The main thing he said to me, and then it just was reiterated throughout the whole thing, was own your space. A lot of us, you feel the need to move, or you know, you get nervous and you don't just stand there and own it. And he said that that's the number one thing as a performer, is just to know that you're on stage and there's nobody else around, and it just own your territory. That was helpful too.
This production is put on entirely by kids. There are 50 actors, and about 25 other kids are behind the scenes. Ages range from 9 to 19. Sid Wiggins is the 18-year-old stage manager.
I call the show every light cue, every sound cue, every fly cue. Everything that comes in, I give the warning, the standby, and the go for.
These children exhibit a high level of professionalism. David Bates plays Enjolras, the leader of the rebellion. He describes what it is like playing this character, and, though young, sounds like a grown, mature actor.
I've never been a character like Enjolras, and I've never been a character like, he's really goal-oriented and knows exactly what he wants and doesn't really go through a lot of changes, but like, goes through changes but doesn't, he sticks the same with what he wants, and I've never really been a character like that, so. But I love how close we are in the show. Like, everybody's really, really close to each other, and it honestly makes the show a better.
Friendship is a common theme when the kids are asked what they like about participating in the Young Actors Guild. Darby Taylor, an actor, says that this bond helps with the difficult telling of the story of Les Mis.
There's this huge rebellion of, like, honestly, kids who, I mean, are standing up for something that they believe in, and, like, kids can, you know, like, we do have power, if nothing else, but as scapegoats, but, like, we can do something, and this play's, like, all about love and, like, what you believe in, and who better to tell that than, like, a cast full of best friends.
Les Mis is serious, dark, and, as mentioned before, much different than YAG's previous fun and lively productions. Missy Gibson, executive director for YAG, says she chose Les Mis to be a challenge for herself as a director, for the creative team, and, of course, for the kids.
It was a little bit scary of a choice, but I'll tell you, just in this last week, it's been completely a calm sense of, you know, just amazement and the belief that our kids did it. I mean, they are doing it. It's an amazing show. It really is.
It is Les Mis school edition, so this version has been edited some. Missy says that there are essential parts to the storyline. There's death, and there are edgy characters.
But at the same time, this is based upon, you know, one of the most historic novels in history. And so it's literature-based as well. So I think there's also a teaching moment in there. Yeah, it's serious. And it's also amazing to see the kids handle that kind of material. But honestly, I think the only thing people are going to say when they leave is, I can't believe those were kids on stage.
Missy says that this is the biggest budget for a show that YAG has ever had. But the kids don't pay to be in the shows. Young Actors Guild aims to keep art accessible. The actors have donned their fancy wigs and costumes, both straight from Chicago, and are set to begin what will be their final dress rehearsal before opening night. And as for Gary Morris, the original Jean Valjean, he was so impressed with YAG that he'll be returning to Alma to watch a performance. Shows are tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at 7 o'clock, plus a 2 o'clock matinee Saturday and Sunday. Tickets and more available at yagonline.org or almapac.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Yes, it means time to leave. No. If you get your yellow ticket to leave, you are the ice cold alone.
Les Mis is now, of course, a theater staple. This month, the University of Arkansas will celebrate the other end of the creative spectrum, brand new works. The Boar's Head Players, the summer company connected to the University of Arkansas Drama Department, is staging the annual new play showcase beginning tomorrow and lasting through late June. There will be two new play readings from MFA students, one each tomorrow and Saturday evening at 7:30, Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. It was at Nadine Baum earlier this week that some other students were working on their contributions for the upcoming new play showcase.
So then, what are we watching?
The struggle between laziness and...
Michael Landman's one-person play class includes four students who've been charged with quite the challenge. Conceive, write, block, and perform a one-person show with about 2.5 weeks to prepare. To hear Michael Landman, associate professor of drama at the university, describe his class, it sounds like a one-person performance boot camp.
They've already had 3 weeks of seven different projects they've presented, created, written, acted, and directed of their own, which immediately go to what we call the magma core part of a human being. Why are you in the theater? What is it you must say to your audiences? When you go to the theater, what do you like to see? And we explore playing multiple characters, we explore comedy, we explore historical figures, and it's very fast and very intense, but it helps them get in touch with the essence of who they are as a performer.
Now, in advance of their performances as part of the new play showcase, the four students are polishing their first ever performance of this type. Nick Saban, one of the students in the class, is an actor, not a playwright. He says he's never done anything quite like this before, which is exactly why he decided to take the class, even though he had no clue what his one-person show would be.
It really kind of teaches you to put yourself out there and to embrace what it is that you have the potential to do.
Nick and his three fellow students will perform their first ever one-person shows, each between 15 and 35 minutes in length, the nights of June 27th and 28th.
When you are faced with the idea of doing your own, especially when you've never done that before, it's very intimidating, but it's a lot of fun, and so far has been well worth it.
There are other one-person shows included in this year's showcase. Larry Luckinbill, a University of Arkansas graduate and a Tony nominee, will present his own works based on the lives of Clarence Darrow and Teddy Roosevelt. Again, Michael Landman with the University of Arkansas Department of Drama.
And these shows are not being presented for the first time. He's been doing the Clarence Darrow, I understand, for many years, continuing to refine it. And so he knows what works. But when he first presented it, it was the same, not just bravery, but gosh, it's sticking your toe in that icy cold water and hoping that you don't sink as you go further in. But clearly, with his two shows, the Teddy Tonight and Clarence Darrow, they've had great success.
Two plays in progress for master's students at the university are also included in the showcase. Todd Taylor's Calculations is a historical play about the invention of calculus. Bob Ford, a co-organizer of the new play showcase, an assistant professor at the university, as well as a published playwright, says the calculation script is nothing short of compelling.
He has culled volumes and volumes of biographical material about Gottfried Leibniz and Sir Isaac Newton and the what's called the priority dispute, who invented the calculus and or who did it first, and turned that fairly dry-sounding topic into a really exciting, dramatic, and touching piece of theater.
That script will be presented tomorrow night at Nadine Baum, and another, Delta Secret, by Prince Durin, will be read Saturday night.
He's rewritten certainly the entire second act and big chunks of the play. And it's a beautiful story set in the 30s in Mississippi about an ex-boxer tenant farmer who is facing this secret that comes up in his family that kind of challenges the bedrock of his own reality. Another gorgeous play that we find over and over again, people leaving these readings and thinking that they actually saw a full production of the play. They forget very quickly that the actors are holding a script. And sometimes I even wonder, do we actually ever need anything other than the actor and the script and an audience? And of course you do, but it should be very rich evenings of theater.
The entire new play showcase schedule also includes two evening performances of long-form comedy improv. And on the final night, June 29th, something billed as Unannounced Arrivals, fresh plays developed by the MFA Acting Studio out of an acting technique called the Meisner technique. Again, Bob Ford.
When you get to the end of the course of this technique, you are doing exercises that look an awful lot like brilliant little scenes. And then you stop that work and start doing scenes that have been pre-written. And I thought, why not stop there? Why not start to actually turn those scenes into plays? And so that's what we're actually doing, a kind of a version of the one-man show. Same principle of what do we have in our hearts to say and creating work out of it. So we're trying to do... When I look at it from one angle, it's terrifying because it takes me a year to write a play. And we're writing a play in 3 weeks.
A play developed in 3 weeks, one person shows created in about 2.5 weeks. Much that happens during the 2-week showcase sounds like an artistic tightrope walk. Michael Landman says, yeah, that's about right. And that's what part of the responsibility of instructors should be.
If you're an actor and you're waiting for a paying gig, in the meantime, you could be working on your art by creating a one-person show. And if you do it well, you actually, it's easier for a producer to hire you. There's only one person. So for me, it's so invigorating to see these artists creating deeply personal material that they are then are going to feel empowered as they go out to continue to embrace the techniques that they're learning and not waiting. Well, it's my responsibility as a teacher, and I think in our department, to send these people out there creating new work. So yes, it's incredibly invigorating for me to watch these guys do the work that they're doing.
The new play showcase from the Boar's Head Players begins tomorrow night with the reading of Todd Taylor's work Calculations at Nadine Baum Studios at 7:30. The reading of Prince Durin's Delta Secret Saturday night at 7:30, also at Nadine Baum. The rest of the schedule extends through June 29th. You can find a schedule at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. It's Thursday, the 14th of June, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar.
And with us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And once again, it's summer and Thursday is the new Friday.
Yes, it is.
Nurture the art experience.
Yeah.
A benefit for the art experience, 5 to 8 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville, jazz, chocolate, and wine.
I've been told that perhaps some of the best chocolate brownies you'll ever eat are going to be there.
At the art experience?
Well, not at the at St. Paul's at this fundraiser for the art experience.
Oh, I have
That's what I've been told.
Really?
Yes.
Well, the best brownies in the world are Abbey Burnett's.
Oh, well, I'm not here to make a judgment. Right. Okay.
$15, call 442-0557. Tonight is the Notes at Night Jazz Series at the Press Room in Bentonville. It starts at 6:30 with Matt and Gus, and it's part of the June Arts Fest.
Matt and Gus. I don't know if you've ever seen them, father and son, and they're just fantastic.
So there you
go. Utterly fantastic. So you got two good options tonight.
The chamber music series.
You've got three good options tonight.
Starts the Artisphere, the musical section of Artisphere. Tonight is an evening of harp and friends at 7 o'clock at the Mildred Cooper Memorial Chapel in Bella Vista.
Right, so three, yeah.
It's $10, 443-5600. And Texas country musician Wade Bowen plays tonight.
He's pretty good.
Four.
At Neumeyer's Rib Room in Fort Smith. Shows at 8 o'clock, and you can find tickets at ribroom.com.
And the KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival Series continues tonight as well. So, at Stella Boyle Smith. So you got five things you can do.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and they're all at the same time, so, okay.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is the features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, the Union gunboat Mound City steamed up the White River to engage Confederate shore batteries at St. Charles on June 17, 1862. A rebel shell crashed into the Mound City, bursting her steam chest and releasing a hellish wave of scalding steam into the vessel. As badly burned Union sailors desperately threw themselves into the water, Confederate sharpshooters shot them down as they struggled in the river. While Yankee infantry quickly overran the rebel defenses, the damage was done. 125 Union sailors died outright, and 25 more were injured. This single shot at St. Charles caused 7% of all combat deaths suffered by the Union Navy during the entire Civil War. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
It is Flag Day, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar.
And with us is Jody Beznoska, who is Vice President for Communications at Walnut Center.
And who did not know it was Flag Day.
See, there it
That's
is.
That's awesome.
June 14th.
That's great. I love Flag Day, now that I know it's here.
Yes.
Well, I also love all things Artisphere, and we're almost done with Artisphere. We've got, I don't know, maybe a week and a half left of programming, all related to the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. But before we dive into all that wonderful classical music, I did want to give an amp update. Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., we will go on sale with the Taste of Country Festival featuring Miranda Lambert. And Miranda Lambert is, strangely, one of those country artists I have heard of.
Yes.
She's a two-time Country Music Artist of the Year Award winner, hugely popular, big time.
This is a heavyweight.
This is big. This is really exciting, actually. And this will be in August, and it will be a festival format.
So multiple stages?
Multiple stages, multiple bands. One of the stage that Miranda performs on will be the big stage out in the field. It will be uncovered, but then we'll also have bands, including some local bands, at the amp stage. So it's going to be an entire evening of music. I think it's going to be really exciting, and we're hoping that it becomes an annual event and we get to do it, you know, more than once with lots of big name country stars.
And so. It's called A Taste of Country, so that would indicate that this is a country specific festival.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. So there'll be lots of different genres or lots of different types of country music mm-hmm. that right. you'll hear in there. And I know there'll be some vendors and there'll be some food and it'll be sort of an open atmosphere, you know, bring a blanket, bring your lawn chairs, hang out on the lawn and listen to some music. So okay. that'll be really fun. That goes on sale tomorrow, 9 a.m. We are figuring that that's going to be a pretty big mm-hmm. on sale. So if for any reason you have issues with getting through on the phones or the website, just be patient. We will, you know, we'll mm-hmm. get to you hopefully as soon as we can. Also at the AMP on the 17th, we will, which is Sunday actually, we will have Colby Calais and Gavin DeGraw with very special guest Andy Grammer. On the 19th, we will have Daughtry, who was the American Idol guy from a few years back. So those are our upcoming AMP stuff that's going on. And we will have more AMP shows announced, you know, over the summer. There's going to be a few
really?
More added to the season.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, we've been doing a lot of country music. We're looking forward to doing some rock and some other stuff. So it'll be great.
That will be exciting.
Yes, it will. Okay, so let's dial back and change tunes a little bit and head into the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. This is the second year of the AFO, and I know we've had some great conversations with Jason about classical mm-hmm. music and all of that, and the musicians are here now.
They have arrived.
I have seen them running around outside and you know, people coming into the back room carrying everything from their violin to their giant bass, and so they're in rehearsals all this week, but tonight actually is our first Artisphere Chamber Music concert. It's an evening of harp and friends, and it's at Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista. It's going to be stunning. Mm-hmm. I believe, I think it's at 7 p.m., and if I'm not mistaken, it's either sold out or very close to sold out. So that is tonight at 7 o'clock. And then our next concert will be Saturday, the 16th, at 7 o'clock. This one is at St. Paul's. And this one is called Great Quintets. It's another chamber music concert featuring Roberto Diaz on the viola. And Roberto Diaz, as I think we've talked about, is the current president of Curtis Institute of Music, which is one of the biggest and most, you know, prestigious training centers for young musicians. Mm-hmm. And so he will be playing actually with some of these young musicians, which is really great. Looks like we have Mozart and Beethoven on that program. And then on Sunday, we will go out to the Barry Performing Arts Center on the John Brown campus in Siloam.
This is everybody.
This will be the full.
This is the orchestra.
Yeah, this will be the first time that the orchestra performs in that large group. It's probably about 80 musicians. They're going to be doing two pieces by Edward Elgar, including his Enigma Variations, and they'll also be doing a viola concerto from William Walton. This is the first time we've presented out at the Barry Center in Siloam Springs, which is really neat. Mm-hmm. I do know that those tickets, which are free, have all been sold at this
spoken
point.
For.
They've all been reserved, yeah.
Okay.
We're hoping that if people do come to the door, you know, we're going to try to, right about 10 minutes prior to start time, if you haven't claimed your free ticket, we're probably going to try to give those tickets away to somebody who's standing there. So if you've reserved a ticket and you're not there by 15, 10 minutes before, you might lose your seat.
Uh-oh.
So it's important to get there. Important to get there early.
I do not want to be the person in charge
yeah.
of that whole system.
Yeah, it's tough. But, you know, actually, and this is probably way more information than you guys need to know, but generally when you give free tickets away, a certain percentage of the people who receive free tickets won't use them. So
I can believe that.
Yeah.
You know, we cross our fingers that we can get everybody who is there in physically there into the concert. So
that's Sunday night, Monday night.
Monday night.
Same concert program.
Correct.
But now at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville.
Absolutely. Same. Exactly the same. It's a 10x10 show, so we'll have the pre-show creative conversation at 6 p.m. We'll have the show, and then we'll have the post-show party out in the lobby afterwards with the little sticky notes on the program so you can share your feedback. So then on Tuesday, the 19th, we will go out to Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs and do the harp concert. This is, again, an evening of harp out there in that beautiful, beautiful setting. I think I'm going to that one. I can't wait to see that one. Then Wednesday, we'll actually have two Artisphere Chamber Music concerts on Wednesday. We'll have at 7 p.m. at the Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista, we will have it's called Inspired Selections, works inspired by architecture and nature with members of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. And then we will also, at St. Paul's here in Fayetteville, be doing an evening of art song with a vocalist named Julian Arsenault and Michael Eliason, who is another sort of what is it? I don't know if legend is the right word, but he's a very high up in the mm-hmm. sort of music school world, and so he'll be playing piano and being a part of that. That's on the 20th. That's a Wednesday, 7 o'clock, St. Paul's. I believe there are tickets for all of those. And then we will also do an evening of art song, that same concert from Wednesday. We will do that again at Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs on the 21st. And then Friday, we will have the Artisphere Festival finale. So that will be the final concert with the Festival Orchestra, another big concert at Brahms. Walton Arts Center with the Brahms Symphony No. 1. And we will also be doing a creative conversation prior to that. And we're going to continue partying into the night after the music is over. We're going to have Three Penny Acre out on the plaza after the concert.
Oh, nice.
And we'll be doing, you know, photos and sort of having a little retrospective of looking back at Artisphere and celebrating all of that. And the musicians will be there, and you know, the stick works out on the plaza will be lit up. And hopefully we'll have a real, real fun and pleasant evening and say goodbye to Artisphere for 2012.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be great.
It is.
It's going to be it's going to be really fun. And if you're on down on Dixon Street, you're probably going to see the musicians running around. Odds are they're young and they might be wearing an Artisphere T-shirt and they'll have a instrument slung over their back.
Can people just randomly join the crowd? If I'm on Dixon, can I just
walk
in?
Tonight, actually, if you're going to be in the bars on Dixon Street, you may hear a concert or two. There's actually
some of these pop up.
Yeah, tonight is the pub crawl. Tonight is the Artisphere pub crawl. So the musicians will be going around to different bars and playing for you, which is pretty fantastic.
That is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Artisphearfestival.org.
Artisphearfestival.org, WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets, or 443-5600, or come on down and stop by the box office and pick up some tickets. The parking all around us is free until 2 p.m.
Miranda Labbert and all that, tickets tomorrow morning at 9.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, Jody. Jody Biznoska is the Vice President of Communication at Walton Arts Center.
RLT and the Second Stage Diversity Unite series present The Rant, with performances tomorrow through Sunday. An African-American teenager is fatally shot on his front porch in a crime-ridden neighborhood, and the grief-stricken mother accuses the police of murdering her son. 631-8988 or rogerslittletheater.org. This is Ozarks at Large. In 2000, Ron Tanner and his girlfriend Jill bought a 19th-century Victorian brownstone in Baltimore. It was a magnificent edifice on a downtown corner. One problem: the house had most recently been home for a fraternity, and the inside was in deplorable condition. And there were rats, and the building had been condemned, and neither Ron nor Jill knew how to fix up a house. How they fix it up and kept their relationship from disintegrating makes up the bulk of Ron's new book, From Animal House to Our House, A Love Story. Ron Tanner is on the road discussing the book. He'll be at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville Saturday afternoon and at the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow in Eureka Springs Sunday afternoon. Yesterday, he was on the road in Tennessee, headed our way, when he explained why he and Jill bought the house in the first place.
She fell in love with the house. I was not in love with the house. And the garbage was everywhere in the house. The boys had abandoned the house because they'd been sued by a number of entities, and they stopped paying their bills. So all their junk was in the house. All their trash was in the house. The house had been abandoned for nearly a year, so they left all these full refrigerators in the house. It was quite a wreck. And the damage was extensive. Three ceilings were falling in. They had taken baseball bats and batted in a number of walls. Graffiti was all over the walls. They had batted out 72 hand-turned balusters from the stairway. The plumbing was totally shot, but the toilets were full. On and on it went. But Jill, when she walked into the house, absolutely loved it and said, "No, this is it. This is absolutely it." And I said, "Jill, we know nothing about fixing up old houses. This can't be it." Because 3 weeks prior to that, I had walked out of a house that we had looked at. I had walked out of it in disgust because every room had needed painting. And now we're in this house that's a total wreck, condemned property, literally condemned property. And she's falling in love with it. Now, I'm crazy about her. We'd only been dating for a few months at the time, and she absolutely insisted that this was the house of our dreams. And when she said, you know, when she talking about our dreams, I was thinking, okay, this is great, our dreams, because I really wanted to marry her, but it was still too early in the relationship to talk about that. So she fell in love with the house, and because I was in love with her, I just took a leap of faith and said, okay, because she agreed to help me, you know, work on it. And I thought, well, this is great. Well, she's going to move in, and we're going to get married and live happily ever after. It was a little rockier than that, but that, in a nutshell, is what happened. Is I was ready to just walk right out of there the minute I saw it.
Neighbors of this wonderful Queen Anne house were happy to see, if a bit nonplussed, they were happy to see someone willing to try to do something with it, weren't they? They welcomed it.
Yeah, they're absolutely delighted. We were the heroes of the neighborhood. I mean, we were celebrated. Everyone was just thoroughly enthusiastic and very supportive. But they couldn't help us. You know, I expected to walk down to the front door to get the morning paper. And I expected to see a line of neighbors waiting to get into the house to help us work on it. You know, everybody wearing coveralls and saying, hey, you know, it's like a barn raising. I expected all kinds of help like that. But no, everybody had their own lives and their own things to do. And, you know, they were happy for us, but they couldn't really help us.
And some, you write of sort of a party when you were first there, a dinner party that's held. And there was some warning as well. In fact, one fellow party attendee looked at you and said, you're never going to bring this house back.
Yeah, that was the neighborhood historian, and he had a lot of credibility. You know, he knew all about the town and, you know, all about Baltimore and all about old houses and whatnot. So he didn't know how to restore an old house, but he said flatly, you won't bring this back. It's too far gone. And we really bristled at that. I kept saying to myself, you know, we're going to have this done in 2 years. Now, that was a revised version. Originally, I said, oh, we'll have it done in 6 months. And then I started saying, okay, we're going to have it done in 2 years. And my mentor on the block kept cautioning me in a very kind way. He kept saying, Ron, it took us 20 years because he and his partner had done this a couple of decades prior to that. So I couldn't hear that because I was just too naive and too hopeful for what we were doing. But yeah, when that historian said no way, not going to happen, we really saw that as a challenge and took that very seriously.
You had fallen in love with Jill, who had fallen in love with this house, who take this, as you say, leap of faith. But as you write in From Animal House to Our House, A Love Story, there were times when you were questioning what you're doing and wondering if this was just going to ruin you financially, and you were coming out of a couple of marriages that hadn't worked.
Yeah, I'm impulsive. I get ahead of myself. You know, I definitely was not a good bet, and there's a leap of faith on Jill's part. She would not move into the house. You know, I moved into the house right when, as soon as we got the plumbing replaced, I moved in the house, again, condemned property. And then I proceeded to encourage her to do the same, to take that leap of faith. And it took about 2 months to convince her, because I was just, you know, because I wasn't a good bet, because I was a two-time loser in marriage, and I knew nothing about fixing up the house, and I was just going crazy with this work, and I was obsessed with working on the house, and it was tough for both of us, and we had issues. You know, the minute we moved in, we were arguing, and we had no plan. We didn't know what to do. We were totally overwhelmed. So that first summer was really hard on us. You know, even though the neighbors were, you know, happy for us, and but we had no money, and my fear was that I would get injured, and that I couldn't finish the work. And, you know, I was on the brink of bankruptcy to begin with because, again, I was overextended. So had anything gone seriously wrong, had I, you know, broken my back or my leg or, you know, it might have just gone down the tubes. And I was convinced that if we did not do this well, if we did not do this together, if we did not make this a success, we would not stay together. We wouldn't be able to bear the shame and the disappointment of that failure. And for me, I was really, really desperate to make it happen. So it was very, very difficult that first year.
You're a writer. You were a writer before this endeavor, this the project started to rehab this house. Were you ever thinking, you know, this is going to be a pretty good book someday? I hate plastering, and I'm in a huge argument with Jill, but boy, this might be a great essay or book someday.
It never occurred to me to write this book, ever. And I guess, you know, that goes to the saying, it's always darkest under the lamp. my friends kept telling me, you know, after we got through all of this, after we were on the other side of it, you know, probably about year five or six, friends started saying, you know, you should write a book about this. And at first I just said, nah. And then the more I thought about it, I said, yeah, actually, I guess I could write a book about this. And it was a very hard book to write because, you know, life is messy. And I had to keep the focus on the house story and the love story and not talk about all the other things that were happening in our lives. So it was quite a challenge to write.
You have an adventure going on right now. It's a 66-stop tour that you're on?
Yeah, 66 cities, 30 states. It's probably actually more than 66, but, who's counting? What I'm doing is a four-month tour across the country, around the country, and now I'm making my way west after having done the Deep South all the way down to New Orleans and back. And the idea of the tour is kind of the barnstorming, just stopping, having planned this out for 6 months or so, but stopping at bookstores, libraries, preservation societies, and giving my presentation, which is essentially a comic monologue with a pretty cool slideshow. And on the way, I'm also doing a documentary about preservation in America, and it's called Preserving America. I'm just talking to preservationists and house owners and anybody who's got an interesting project that's related to this. I'm also stopping at interesting places. Like I stopped at the American Sign Museum, which is the first of its kind in the country, and stopped an antique boat restoration place. You know, whatever has to do with preservation, I'm interested in. I'm going to stop at a travel trailer restoration place in California and also talk to a guy who believes in reusing, recycling bicycles. So, again, just preserving stuff in America. What's the status of it? It's pretty cool. It's really interesting. I'm learning quite a lot that way.
And you've become familiar with Walmart parking lots.
Oh, man. Yes, I am parking. I'm camping mostly in Walmart parking lots, mainly because camping is expensive. And there are a number of other reasons. You go to my blog, and I've got a post about that. But, yeah, because I'm in cities most of the time, it's easiest just to park in a Walmart lot where all the other RVers and long-haul truckers park for free. And that's where Cleo and I am traveling with our Basset Hound. This is our third Basset Hound, Cleo. And that's where we spent a lot of time. That's her.
There she is on cue.
She's barking at a horse because she's never seen a horse before. And,
Okay. The name of the book is From Animal House to Our House, a love story. Ron, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Ron Tanner is the author of From Animal House to Our House, a Love Story. He'll discuss the book Saturday afternoon at 2:30 at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. He'll also talk about the book at the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow in Eureka Springs Sunday afternoon at 2. And you can learn much more about the book and Ron at houselove.org.
KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
KUAF is proud to co-sponsor Walton Arts Center's Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, with the Chamber Music Series. Now through June 21st, classical trios, quartets, and quintets will perform at various locations, including Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs, Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista, and St. Paul's Church in Fayetteville. More information available at artistspherefestival.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, Urbanette in Carroll County.
I was going to say Urbanette. I don't remember if that's exactly on Highway 412 or not.
I would not know
that. I think I will be corrected if I am incorrect with this, but I believe that's one of the towns that when there was a new highway, it was bypassed and it kind of came close to disappearing. I don't know. Urbanette experts are invited to email or call.
Yes.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Madholkar.
Antoinette Grajeda and I back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. You and I
back on Sunday.
Sunday morning at 9 with the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. Plenty to do tonight. You've got the KUAF Chamber Music Series continuing. You've got the pop-up musicians on Dixon Street from Artisphere, the fundraiser for Art Experience.
Right. Just a lot of stuff.
Pigs exhibition, all of that. So get off the couch. That's my advice. Thanks, Ithi.
Thank you.